Welcome to the Cornell Veterinary Podcast, where we dive deep into the discovery, care, and learning that happens at Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine. In this episode, we're talking with wildlife veterinarian Dr. Martin Gilbert about his work saving some of the most endangered species around the globe. This is the Cornell Veterinary Podcast. I'm Scott Webb, and Dr. Gilbert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting. I don't know much about big cats, and especially Nepalese big cats, so great to have your expertise today. And I know that you recently published a paper about canine distemper virus, I think abbreviated as CDV, and that'll make it easier for both of us, in these Nepalese big cats. So maybe you can summarize the main takeaways from that study.
Well, we've been working on canine distemper virus in tigers in a number of different Asian countries over the last few years. And this is really the latest step in that work. So going back to 2019, we started analyzing blood samples from both tigers and leopards from Nepal to determine whether they had antibodies that indicate exposure to this virus that is known to kill big cats in other countries.
Yeah, and I know you mentioned other countries, and I know that you've studied CDV in tigers elsewhere, right? There are tigers, obviously, many places. Maybe you can summarize as well what you discovered and what the impacts have been of those discoveries.
Our findings were really that for the first time we demonstrated that tigers had been exposed to canine distemper virus in Nepal, which was new, something we weren't aware of before. And that is an important finding because canine distemper virus, it is lethal for tigers. However, we also were able to screen samples from leopards, and we found that 1 in 3 leopards, 30% of the leopards that we tested, had antibodies to the virus. So obviously a much higher exposure than we were seeing in the tigers.
That's really interesting. And I guess one of the silver linings of COVID-19 is that we're all a little bit more familiar with the word antibodies, and it gets discussed more in the media and social media. So I have at least a sense of this, but it's really fascinating. And I guess I'm wondering, do you have a sense of why there's been this increase of CDV in wild carnivores?
We don't know that this is an increase because it's the first time really that we have been analyzing the samples from tigers and leopards in Nepal. There had been one prior study that had tested a batch of tiger samples that had not found the virus. So it is possible that it's a new thing, but it's not something that we know for sure.
I see what you mean. It's like, maybe it's not an increase. Maybe it's not a new thing. Maybe we're just testing differently or better or whatever it might be. You know, the natural follow-up is, how does the work that you're doing on these emerging diseases impact the overall conservation of these endangered species, right? That's what we're talking about here. These are all endangered species. So how does it impact that?
The concern really is that we're not in a natural situation these days for, let's say, tigers. So if we went back 100 years ago, there might be 100,000 tigers stretched across Asia from the Russian Far East and down into Indonesia and India, all the way as far west as Turkey in the Caspian Sea. Now, at that time, we had very large populations of tigers. But as we're looking now, most tiger populations are much depleted. They're small, they're fragmented. And when you get down to populations of that size, they become vulnerable to any kind of chance event, any kind of stochastic event like an outbreak of disease. At that point, the tiger populations are too small really to absorb the losses from an infectious disease, and it can actually represent an extinction event for them. This is particularly important for tiger populations that are really small. A population that is as low as maybe 25 individuals or fewer is perhaps 2/3 as likely to decline to extinction over a period of 50 years than with distemper than in situations without distemper. Now, where that is significant for the population is that about half of the world's tigers now are found in populations of less than 25 individuals. So the circumstances really have changed for them, and they're now much more vulnerable to disease than they were before.
Yeah, that's interesting, as you say, right? When there was 100,000 or more, they could sort of absorb those losses. But you know, 25 or less in these smaller groups, you can see how something like distemper could just wipe them out, you know, over a relatively short period of time. So I think, yeah, obviously, I want to know, what can we do? Like, what should be done immediately to protect these big cats?
Well, now that we know that these populations are exposed, the biggest question really is where they're picking up the virus from. because these populations are quite small, it's not possible for them to sort of maintain the virus within their own population, because very quickly the virus would spread from individual to individual and it would run out of hosts. And so the virus is actually spilling over from other species. So other populations of other carnivores, whether that's domestic dogs or even other wild carnivores that are competent as hosts for the virus.
Sure.
And so our question really is, where is it coming from? Is it coming from dogs or is it coming from other wild carnivores?
Yeah, it has to be coming from somewhere, of course. And then assuming part of your studies, part of your work is about figuring out, okay, where is it coming from and how do we prevent the spread of distemper and, you know, and other things that might just wipe out these big cats? Are there some bright spots, maybe some potentials for success in your work? Like, what's good? What's going well?
What's going well is we now have a better handle on what is happening. And we're starting to figure out in some of these populations where the virus is actually coming from. So in Nepal, we found higher levels of exposure in the leopard population compared to the tigers. And what that suggests is it may indicate that domestic dogs are actually the source in Nepal, which is good news. It's good news in the sense that we can do something about that, because the easiest way of managing the virus is to vaccinate. There's very good vaccines for canine distemper virus. And if the virus is coming from domestic dogs, vaccination in those dog populations that the tigers and particularly the leopards are exposed to enables us to, or have a potential at least, of managing the infection and removing the source of infection for tigers and leopards. So at least in Nepal, this is something we can tackle.
Yeah, that's definitely a bright spot. Maybe you can describe some ways in which your in-country partnerships have been integral to the success of your projects.
Our in-country partners are essential in each of the countries that we work. So we've been working with tigers up in the Russian Far East, in Indonesia, in Thailand, in Nepal, and in India. And in each of these countries, our partners are really essential to being able to do any of this work. So we work with local veterinarians in those countries, or sometimes with biologists who have collected samples routinely when they're handling tigers. So either as part of research projects or in response to situations where they're responding to conflict between tigers, leopards, and people, or in rehabilitation. By collecting samples and archiving those samples, we have material to work with that we can understand the disease exposure of these populations. We also do all of our laboratory testing in country. And so we work with local partners in each of these countries, local laboratories, because that provides a more sustainable means of analyzing samples in the long term and providing a long-term means of surveillance of these populations,
sure,
rather than exporting samples for analysis in international laboratories. So it's both more financially sustainable and a means of continuing this work in the long term.
And you know, Doctor, I'm sure folks that are listening maybe want to learn more like I did today. This is sort of the headlines today, but they may want to dig in and learn more or they want to get involved. Maybe you can tell folks, give them a URL or something where they can go.
Sure. If people are interested in learning more about our work, both with the big cats and other aspects of wildlife health, they can check out our website at wildlife.cornell.edu.
Yeah, that's awesome. And this has been really educational. So thanks so much. You stay well.
All right. No worries. You too.
And thanks for joining us for this installment of the Cornell Veterinary Podcast. Be sure to like, review, share, and subscribe to the show. And stay tuned for more thought-provoking conversations. I'm Scott Webb. See you next time.